This is Ozarks at Large. It's Tuesday, December 11th, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. The Alma Performing Arts Center will present Miracle on 34th Street this Saturday at 8 p.m. This nationally touring musical offers family humor, spectacle, and the message that Santa Claus is no myth. Tickets and more information are available at almapac.org or 632-2129.
And support for KUAF comes from the Rogers Historical Museum and its Winter Wonderland tours of the museum's 1895 Hawkins House through December 31st. These tours explore how ancestors survived winter's weather and used it as an inspiration in decorating their homes for the holidays. Located on South 2nd Street in downtown Rogers, 621-1154 or rogersarkansas.com/museum for more information.
Ahead on Ozarks, an update on immigration reform, an update on the grassroots documentary project called Directing Democracy, and our tech ambassador is back with a list of new apps for your smartphone and tablet.
First, Arkansas 2nd District Congressman Tim Griffin says he holds on to hope that a deal can be reached to avoid the fiscal cliff. With only 3 weeks to reach an agreement to avoid the fiscal cliff, President Obama and House Speaker John Boehner continue negotiations. Sunday, they met face-to-face for the first time to discuss the matter. Congressman Griffin says he remains optimistic.
I'm optimistic that we will get some kind of agreement. A lot of this back and forth is what happens normally in negotiations, whatever the issue is. So I'm always an optimist. I'm always one who believes that we can reach an agreement. And so we'll see what happens.
If an agreement cannot be reached, automatic tax hikes and spending cuts do go into effect on January 1st.
A pilot program in Fayetteville in which glass bottles are recycled from 8 bars on Dixon Street may be expanding in the new year. That's according to the city's waste reduction coordinator, Brian Pugh. He says in 2013, the city will try to include all of Dixon Street in the glass recycling program. But expanding that program will involve some additional costs.
We had to have some better containers on our end that we could offer to the businesses. And then also we were working on trying to do some promotional pieces to it, so like posters and table tents and coasters and things that we could work with these restaurants and bars to give them these items, and then the patrons of these places would know that there's a recycling program in place for glass recycling, and it could become an education piece that would help us.
But aside from additional costs, Pugh says expanding the recycling program will require the city to continue to work closely with the businesses involved.
We don't have really any contamination issues. We've done a good job of making sure that the restaurants and bars that are participating, they have a key to the dumpsters and they're locked, and so there's not any contamination. But we are fighting a little bit of the bag situation. We don't want any bags in the glass. So just working with these places to help them with their collection in-house, and when they carry that out to the container, to make sure that it's only glass being put in there, not bags, because those are contaminant to the system that we moved the glass through up into Kansas City.
The glass collected in the program is taken to Ripple Glass Company, which converts the recycled bottles into Owens Corning insulation and into new beer bottles for the Boulevard Brewing Company.
Arkansas's energy opportunities will be the topic of a workshop tonight at Jones Center for Families in Springdale. The Energy Jobs for Arkansas event is hosted by the Applied Sustainability Center at Walton College of Business at the University of Arkansas. Michelle Halsell is the managing director of the center. She says the workshop will focus on the areas of renewable energy, energy efficiency, and alternative fuels.
Arkansas has opportunities in all three areas. We have resources in the renewable energy sector and in the alternative fuel sector that we are not currently capitalizing on to the fullest extent possible. So the idea is to really explore what is Arkansas's potential in these areas relative to other states around the nation, and what would it take in order to create jobs in these different areas and enjoy the other economic and environmental benefits that these particular technologies offer.
Also says, aside from creating jobs in the state's energy sector, taking advantage of energy opportunities in the state could enhance Arkansas's energy security, meeting more of the state's long-term energy needs, but that's not all.
Diversifying our energy portfolio also has the added benefit of helping to keep energy prices stable for the long term. Energy efficiency and renewable energy also help to insulate our economy from price spikes in other energy sources. And, of course, it can help to attract new investment to our state as well. So energy efficiency and renewable energy is just a smart strategy for the state of Arkansas, and one that we hope we'll see increasing emphasis on in 2013 and beyond.
The Energy Jobs for Arkansas event takes place from 6 until 7:30 tonight at the Jones Center for Families in Springdale. The event is the first of four to be held across the state in the next month. The next one, January 8th, at Arkansas State University in Jonesboro.
The Arkansas Scholarship Lottery has passed a sizable milestone. The more than three-year-old state lottery has funded more than $300 million in scholarships since lottery sales began in late September of 2009. According to thecitywire.com, that amounts to more than 90,000 scholarships to Arkansas high school students. The milestone announced yesterday comes as the lottery faces a trend of declining collections that has occurred during the first few months of the fiscal year in Arkansas. Some project if no changes are made to the scholarship award amounts, the lottery program could potentially face a $7 million decline in revenue for the fiscal year.
The Fayetteville Public Library has received a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. The $2,500 grant will help fund a film series for the 2013 Adult Summer Reading Program. The series is called America's Music, a film history of our popular music from blues to bluegrass to Broadway. The series will feature six viewing and discussion sessions with a different film screened in each of those sessions. Each film will be followed by a discussion led by Dr. Robert Cochran, chair of the University of Arkansas American Studies Program and director of the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies. The Fayetteville Public Library is one of about 50 sites across the nation that will offer the America's Music Program. That list also includes Northwest Arkansas Community College in Bentonville.
In other grant news, the Arkansas Civil War Sesquicentennial Commission has awarded more than $9,800 in grants to six projects to help commemorate the war across the state. One of those recipients was the Community Clearinghouse of Fort Smith, which received $2,000 for the Fort Smith Heritage Festival. According to the Community Clearinghouse website, the 2013 Heritage Festival is the fifth such annual event in the city. The all-day event is set for April 6th and is free to the public.
Arkansas Senators John Bozeman and Mark Pryor are continuing their push to keep the flying mission intact for the 188th Fighter Wing in Fort Smith. Last week, the senators joined a bipartisan group of senators urging the Senate and House Armed Services Committee to support provisions in the Defense Authorization Bill that would keep the A-10 Warthogs on the tarmac in Fort Smith. Arkansas Senate delegation joined 30 other senators and nearly 40 representatives in signing the bipartisan letter to the chairs of the Senate and House Armed Forces Committee. In the letter, the members of Congress asked the committees to continue the freeze on changing the structure of Air Force manpower through the end of fiscal year 2013 until a third-party independent review of the Air Force's budget can be conducted.
Tonight's weather forecast calls for clear conditions with a low of 19 degrees in northwest Arkansas and a low of 22 degrees in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, expect clear skies with highs in the low 50s. And tomorrow night, expect clear conditions with lows in the upper 20s and a wind chill of 21 in northwest Arkansas. This is Ozarks at Large. Minaya Reith, a top Arkansas immigrant civil rights activist, recently came to our studios to talk with Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich about what we should expect regarding immigration reform at both the federal and state level.
For nearly 5 years, U.S. comprehensive immigration reform has been in irons. That's jargon for when the sails on a boat pointing directly into the wind cannot catch a breeze. For a time, reform looked possible. But in the summer of 2007, conservatives refused to budge, and it's all but faded from national politics. Still, immigrant rights activists have steered on, working mostly at the state and local level. But now, given the nuances of this past presidential election, reform is back. But just before the election, President Barack Obama did say his biggest failure was not passing comprehensive immigration reform, and it wasn't for lack of trying. And Mireya Reith, executive director of the Arkansas United Community Coalition, understands why.
I think a lot of his political weight was spent on national health care reform. A lot of the partisanship that came out of that just made it absolutely impossible to be able to tackle on a big piece of legislation.
Reith says the president should get tremendous credit for issuing two powerful executive orders, prosecutorial discretion, ordering immigrant enforcement agents to focus only on criminal aliens, and the President's Deferred Action Directive. It's providing an estimated 1.7 million out of 4.4 million undocumented youth age 16 to 30 relief from possible deportation if they meet several key criteria.
He even introduced conversations around family unity waivers. So these were all important pieces of legislation that or conversations that were begun that he could at his executive level that we do think, you know, despite all of the partisanship, were an important opportunity.
The U.S. Department of Human Services is in charge of deferred action. It's reporting as of early October receiving 180,000 applications and approving nearly 4,600 youngsters. And among them are 400 Arkansas youth that have applied.
We are knowing now, although we don't have the numbers exactly, but several of those students have even gone as far in their process as now have been approved. They're getting their work permits. They're getting their social security numbers. And now some of them are just starting to take that next step of actually getting their driver's license or applying for their driver's license. So very encouraging to see the success. Our estimates have to be that at least since October, double of that have been supported. So maybe in that 600 to 800 range. That said, there's 6,800 that qualify for this policy here in Arkansas.
Conservatives have largely ignored the nearly 11 million undocumented immigrants in their midst, with the exception of enacting punitive measures, Reith says. But now they're paying attention given a growing Hispanic majority. 70% voted for President Barack Obama.
The headline that just really made us so happy and content and felt our work worthwhile was that the Latinos were who decided the presidential election, and the Latino vote was who decided that. And in the morning that the Republicans have a Latino problem, which we knew was something that would grab the attention, especially of the naysayers during the election, who both either tried to stay away from the issue or took a critical side on that issue. And so since then, we have just seen such enhanced momentum at the national level.
Right. Points to a collection of prominent Republicans emerging to take up reform.
Some of those prominent Republicans, even just this last week, were former President Bush, the Attorney General of Utah, Paul Ryan, former vice presidential candidate. Obviously, Senator Marco Rubio has always been a voice for the Republicans on this and has even gone on record this last week saying he sees that there's a 50-50 chance.
Evidence of that was consideration of the Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, or STEM Jobs Act, sponsored by U.S. Representative Lamar Alexander.
And here in the United States, since the 1980s, we have not increased the number of visas, worker visas, for people to come here and work in a legal manner, which is one of the reasons that we did see, you know, undocumented populations and employers encouraging undocumented immigrants to come here. And it's the idea of extending visas to legal residents or extending visas to people from other countries in a legal manner for that have this high-tech skills. But however, how this bill was recently framed would have destroyed another program, a diversity visa program that was considered equally valuable in that it actually targets some non-traditional countries in terms of extending visas.
As a result, Senate Democrats denied passage of the bill, also on the grounds that lower skill workers were not accommodated.
And there was also last week the ACHIEVE Act, which was, again, sort of a watered-down version of the DREAM Act. And the concept of being able to provide a work permit to undocumented citizens, much like deferred action is now, but then no pathway to citizenship with there and no sort of definitive answer of what happens with these students afterward.
Although misguided, Reith says, the intent shows that Republicans are at least open to creating a pathway to citizenship for millions of undocumented immigrants. At the state level, Maria Reith says the new Republican majority has an opportunity to frame this session as positive.
It is our sincere hope that we don't see any legislation that is purely punitive in nature and is anti-immigrant. And so laws that would punish undocumented immigrants and dedicate resources to detention and deportation. We just feel that all of these, they increase taxpayers' burden, they create wedges within the community, and it really would have a negative negative economic impact on our businesses, including up here in Northwest Arkansas, where there is such a large reliance on these pools. And there are so many immigrants who are entrepreneurs themselves. And right now, from current conversations that we've had in Little Rock, we may not see those bills. I think there is somewhat of an interest in at least some of our elected officials down there to wait and see what happens at the national level.
Stillwright says that the Arkansas United Community Coalition is prepared to fight a voter ID bill proposed last cycle by then State Representative Brian King, District 91, Green Forest. He was elected to State Senate District 5 and is expected to pitch the bill again.
Which many times is not thought of being just exclusive to immigrants, but would include our immigrant community as well. It obviously, we think, would negatively impact our African-American and other minorities, and more importantly, our community that lives below the poverty line. And we do have a significant community here in Arkansas. And we are gravely concerned because there were candidates that rallied behind that. And we do and can firmly expect to see that sort of bill.
Instead, Medea Wright hopes legislators will support a state-level DREAM Act, a Development Relief and Education of Alien Minors Act, for Arkansas immigrant youth. Perhaps as many as 6,000 in state. More than a dozen states have passed one, providing undocumented high school graduates access to in-state college tuition, scholarships, and school aid. Both University of Arkansas Chancellors David Gearhart and Joel Anderson support an Arkansas DREAM Act. But as deferred action permits are issued, more undocumented high school graduates are expected to pursue higher education.
So we think there's a great opportunity here for the state legislature to clarify, as so many other states have, about that extension. And we do think it would be beneficial to Arkansas.
And although most would think our new Republican majority legislature could snarl passage of progressive immigration reform in Arkansas, optimism does prevail, at least going in, given that new House and Senate leaders, most notably Representative Davy Carter of Cabot and also Senator Michael Lamoureux of Russellville, may be willing to bargain. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To learn more, visit ArkansasCoalition.org.
Many worry that democracy hangs in the balance in Egypt, that a vote to approve a new constitution would grant the president and the Islamist-dominated parliament too much power. But if it fails, President Morsi would have unchecked power. I'm Neil Conan, the battle for democracy in Egypt, plus our weekly turn to the opinion page. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon at 1 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoyt News Studio are Marty Shutter and Cody Ford, two of the people behind the Directing Democracy Project. Gentlemen, welcome back.
Good to be here.
You were here in the summer, correct?
A while back,
yeah. And that's when you were about to go on the road. Tell us, remind us what Directing Democracy wanted to do before you left town.
Well, part of what we wanted to do with Directing Democracy was Marty and the rest of the team put together a website, and people wrote legislation online, and Marty did a great job kind of shepherding them through that process. And so we had this great bill, and I'll let Marty tell you more about that, but had this great bill, and we want to take it on the road, talk to experts, meet regular people, and just kind of see what people in America thought about what we were doing and what they thought about the state of things.
Now, Marty, when we last talked, you had narrowed it down that it was going to be something to do with finance, campaign finance reform.
Yeah.
What happened after that?
Well, the leading into that direction, obviously, it was open-ended at the beginning, because the idea behind it was that the community will, if presented with an opportunity to speak about their threshold issue, they would come up with that one at a time.
And by community, you mean this online community.
Mm-hmm. In this case, it was open up as wide as could be. And so their threshold issue was campaign finance reform. And so it was sort of approached as what is the biggest issue? How do we handle this issue? What works? What doesn't? And then what can we propose that's new? So a sort of amalgamation of those points came out to be the rough draft of the bill. We took that on the road in the van to a couple different professors and you know, everyday people. That's such a strange phrase, but we kept hearing everyday experts. And so we took it to as many people as possible. We literally showed it to them, to people who are smarter than us, you know, and who have history in creating legislation. And we vetted it.
Because the idea here is you didn't just want some idealistic piece of something that felt good. You wanted something that could actually pass muster if
Correct.
You could get it on the floor of the House or Senate.
Correct.
Exactly.
The idea is that we could as a community, create ready-made legislation for a congressman. So it's not like, you know, usurping the power of a congressman as much as saying, let us, you know, help you create a bill that you can champion for us. Be our representative in this sense.
And there's nothing about what we're doing is truly radical. I mean, you take organizations like ALEC and some of these, you know, and even lobbyists write legislation and they give it to a congressman.
Yeah.
People don't think twice about a lobbyist doing it. But when you start talking about, well, we're going to take it to the people and let the people do it, that seems kind of radical to some individuals, you know, but it's truly not. And, you know, what, like we'd said, one of the things we wanted to do was take this out to the experts and be like, hey, does it work? And
tell us, you know, deflate our tires, you know, inflate our tires, help us out. And they did. And we put together almost inadvertently two of the opposing minds on the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act, which, you know, they refer to, you know, as BCRA. So you have
McCain-Feingold.
You have Dr. Jonathan Krasno, formerly of Princeton. We met at Binghamton University. And then Dr. Milkus, who was or is the director of the Democracy Studies at the University of Virginia, Jefferson, Virginia. And these two minds were the intellectual opponents on this, the last piece of campaign finance reform. And so we, through this process, have brought them together on the next one, ours, and they've each actually added fuel and weight and fire to this. So it was kind of beautiful to see that happen.
Exciting.
Yeah. And this all came from – this was all crowdsourcing. So when Cody talks about the community and, you know, sort of being just, in, you know, the antithesis of an ALEC, it's crowd wisdom, you know.
So you have that. The other thing you were about to do was the two of you and other people were going to get in a van and go. And you're talking to people. You're conducting interviews. Tell me about some of the stuff you collected.
Well, we had it was probably the most Homeric thing I've ever done. The van, you know, we checked the fluids, you know, you kick the tires, light the fires. And we had, we had a computer. We were broadcasting Wi-Fi. We were generating power the entire time. So it was a mobile studio. We were, you know, interviewing one another. We were here and there. And then we were broadcasting live streams. And then in terms of collecting interviews, we were ready at all times to – because once you open up this idea that Cody talked about as being, you know, sort of like oddly radical, people begin to talk. And they get it, because 2 minutes in, you've talked about politics without mentioning a party. And it's not politics anymore. It's actually policy. And so that – you understand there's a whole well waiting to be tapped of substance that is not being tapped currently. And so as soon as you talk to people, they are ready to talk. And if they haven't spoken about it yet, they will formulate their thoughts for the first time right in front of you. So we were ready to capture this, and we did. Our real experts and geniuses were people who were making $7 an hour, like who put these points – they synthesized these points with pain, and it was jarring.
One of the interesting things about that crowd wisdom of just interviewing regular people was we were out following a congressional candidate in New York's 22nd district. His name is Dan Lamb. He's a former staffer for the previous congressman. And they did redistricting, kind of changed the ground game for him. But we were following him around while he's canvassing, and we meet this gentleman named Charles. Charles, from talking to him, Gabe, the director, and I hung back and did an interview strictly with him. And Charles worked about 60 hours on average a week, making minimum wage. And you could just see, I mean, he was really frustrated. Like, he wasn't being partisan about it. He was just like, you're there, make something happen. And that's the job of Congress. And he just felt like they had become so out of touch with things. And he expressed it really eloquently. And I believe we sent in a clip for you to, you know, for the audience to listen to. And it's just amazing. If we could have 100 Charles interviews, our bill's done, our case has been made in this film.
Go to work. Stop taking breaks. Stop being obstructionist. Make a deal. Whatever deal you have to make for people to start working, make that deal. That's all that counts. The lies, what you're going to do, do it. You don't have to talk about it anymore. Don't talk about it. Go to work and act like you want to make a deal, a concession with the other side of the aisle. And whatever you got to do, just get in the room and hammer it out.
We weren't looking for answers as much as we were trying to get as much information. And so we spoke, you know, kind of about the history of the structure of the laws that are campaign finance reform, the sort of status of the justifications we use. So you hear this perception of corruption and corruption as being the justification behind almost all campaign finance reform. The theory being that a perceived weak system perhaps invites further corruption. What does that mean for the strength of a democracy? And then what are you giving your next generation? And so we approached it from this optimism, but with a real, worry that a lost generation, disconnected from government, the ramifications of that, will happen for forever, We won't get it back. And so we spoke to a lot of people about the history and the status of those justifications, and are we remaining true to that? Are we legislating from a place of, preservation of the nation? We kind of wonder now, what is the incentive to govern? What does attract someone to the system? And so if you can't prove, bribery is illegal, but if you can't prove corruption, if you can't prove it, well, you can prove perceived corruption. You can prove that. You can data mine that all day.
Right.
And you can make a beautiful film about it and have a bill at the end that says, maybe it's not just a petition, but maybe there's something else that we can do.
So what's next? Where are you in the process as a whole?
Right now, we are back in Arkansas, and it's good to be back home. And one thing that we've been doing is sort of just reformulating what the next parts. This film isn't just the road trip. The road trip is a thread and part of the film for us. But we're also we have a few other ideas. I don't want to, give it all away right now. But we are going to be doing a few other things that are within a few hours driving distance that we can do and take care of that really help us flesh this story out. Like if there is a local government that's doing something interesting, or a business owner who's took a stand against outsourcing, or we talked to David Shipler when he was in town. Mm-hmm. He talked a lot about the working poor, and a great point he made was that
is speech, then the poor are speechless. Boom. He said that. We got in the van and we set out to prove that. So.
Can people still go to directingdemocracy.com? Mm-hmm.
They can. Right now, it's best to follow us on Facebook and Tumblr and Twitter. So they can go to facebook.com/directingdemocracy. On Twitter, we are @ddemocracy. They wouldn't give us the whole thing. And with Tumblr, it's directingdemocracy.tumblr.com.
So. No Instagram?
We do have Instagram, actually. I forget Instagram. So, yeah, we have a lot of photos up. You can follow us on Instagram @directingdemocracy.
And you'll come back for another update?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Marty, Cody, thank you both very much.
Thank you for having us.
Marty Shutter and Cody Ford are two of the organizers for the Directing Democracy Project that began in Arkansas. They returned to our studio for that update last week. It is Tuesday, the 11th day of December, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Do you have to be our age, Kyle, to immediately know the words Mannheim steamroller?
I don't know.
I think that pretty much if you're over 30, Mannheim steamroller just sets your heart pitter-pattering. And they are in town tonight for two shows at 4 o'clock and at 7:30 at the Walton Arts Center. It is their Christmas show. Tickets start at $59. I'd call, not just show up.
And, 4 o'clock's early.
It is early, but we talked, Christina and I talked to Jody Beznoska about this, and they say, no problem. There's demand. 4 o'clock. You wouldn't put many shows at 4 o'clock on Tuesday. Mannheim Steamroller, you do. People, if they have jobs or school, they rearrange.
Sure.
It's not a bad
idea. Yeah. I'm just surprised.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, they are a huge draw. Also tonight, the Arkansas Archaeological Society will hear Jerry Hilliard talk about recent investigations of 1962 excavations at Breckenridge Shelter, which, if you're into archaeology, sounds fascinating. That's 7 o'clock at the survey office in Fayetteville. And auditions second night for Night Must Fall, a thriller coming up in February at the Art Center of the Ozarks. Audition time is 7 o'clock, and you can call 751-5441 to find out more about the show.
All right.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
On the next Fresh Air, the U.S. Army's secret chemical weapons testing program. During the Cold War, LSD, nerve agents, and other drugs were tested on 5,000 healthy U.S. soldiers. We talk with Rafi Khachaturian about his article, Operation Delirium, published in this week's edition of The New Yorker. Join us.
Fresh Air with Terry Gross, tonight at 6 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Tyrell Dennison. He is our tech ambassador. Welcome back.
Morning, Kyle.
I have to tell you, since the last visit when you were talking about ecosystems, I've heard from many people, many who were very pleased and some who were very worried about the technical ecosystems that could take over their house.
Yeah.
We're going a little bit smaller this time.
Bringing the scale down, yeah.
Yes. To things that can help you on your tablet or your iPhone apps. They say there's an app for everything. Is that true?
I think just about. There may be a few things that they haven't found a way to make an app for, but that's just because we've only been doing this for a handful of years at this point. So.
But apps to me are like books and independent movies and music. There's so many, I don't know how to keep up with them.
Yeah, it's difficult, and you have to kind of stay plugged in, keep your ear to the ground, and know different blogs to look at. I guess I'll kind of take you on a tour of my devices, of stuff okay. that I would recommend. Looking first at news-related apps, there's a certain public radio station that I know of that has
yes.
a great news app.
Yes.
But beyond that, to more in the lines of reading content, they have Flipboard, which is a very popular app.
I love this. Someone told me about this about 6 months ago, and I check it every day now.
Yeah, Flipboard turns your favorite news sources and blogs into the digital equivalent of a book. You're literally flipping, well, it's an analog for flipping pages, mm-hmm. but you're flipping through the content of your favorite news sources that are online.
It's an aggregator.
Yeah, absolutely.
It brings in your Twitter feed, Facebook, Washington Post, Sports Illustrated, ESPN.
You name it, you can plug it in there.
Yeah.
And so that's it takes what's called the RSS feeds from those places and takes that content and puts it right into their app.
And it's free.
It's free. Another one similar to that is Pulse, which is another news aggregator that gives it all to you. And you select categories of news, and then it'll give recommended, and then you can add some to that. So both of those are free. Both of those are available on iPhone, iPad, Android. So if you're within those two major areas,
You
should be good. We won't really go much into, for those of you who are BlackBerry or Windows Phone, I'll apologize in advance because I've little to no experience with those and rarely see those in the wild, as they say these days. Obviously, some of these will be on those platforms, but there's just not a whole lot of active development going on for those
right.
places right now. Who knows, BlackBerry's got a big announcement coming up in January, so... But moving on from that, a really neat way to do books is called Overdrive Media Center.
Overdrive Media Center.
Overdrive Media Center is a public library app. And what it does is it gives you access to whatever your local public library's digital content is through their app. So for Fayetteville Public Library, you go and you tell it Fayetteville Public Library, and I believe their source is Library to Go, and it'll pull that right into your tablet and allow you to download through their digital means. And so you'll download some are audiobooks, some are ebooks. You'll download those, and you'll have them for a specific amount of time. And when that time is up, it just takes it right off your device.
Hmm.
And that goes on iPad, iPhone, Android, anywhere there. And so you can have that content really easily accessible, and that works for pretty much any public library, whether you're Bentonville, Rogers.
But I only pick one?
No, you can have a list of
so
public
libraries. I could say Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Springdale, Rogers are my local libraries.
Yeah, well, you have to meet whatever restrictions that
gotcha.
Library has for
gotcha.
Allowing digital content. So if you need an account with them,
sure.
You have to have an account at Bentonville, Rogers, Fort Smith.
Okay.
Lowell, Van Buren, so on and so forth.
Gotcha.
And then, as I mentioned last time with ecosystems, I like the Kindle app because it allows me to read and listen in sync with one another. Between the Kindle reading app and the Audible audiobook app, I can stay completely in sync as I go between reading and listening to books. And that's available cross-platform as well.
And again, that it means that you could drive from work to home listening to the book, get out, go for a walk or run with headphones on your iPhone or your smartphone, pick up right where you were, come home, shower, sit down, bring up your tablet, and again, the book is right where it was.
Right where it was, right where you quit listening, wow. And you read from there, unless you kind of look and see different categories and who's posting. Moving with social now, obviously there's a ton of social media apps and a variety of different networks to be involved in. One of the neatest I've found, though, is Birdseye. It's an iPhone, iPad-only app, but it's a Twitter aggregator, so it pulls in Twitter feeds. So what Birdseye does, knowing that everything's public, will take a map and give you a map and show you across the map what everyone's tweeted. And that's actually really neat in the case of events. So, for example, when we had our earthquake last year, and everyone was that an earthquake? The first thing I did was pull up Birdseye right over Northwest Arkansas and look to see if I was the only person who felt an earthquake. And all of a sudden, I started seeing, bloop, what was that? Bloop, it's an earthquake, bloop, bloop. And that, to me, is confirmation. That was an earthquake. And then I could see it through other means afterwards.
So you can specifically say, I want Northwest Arkansas, or I want the Dallas-Fort Worth metro area, see what people are talking about at that time.
Absolutely. And you can narrow it even further. I mean, you can get it as narrow as you want. Now, that's not to say you're going to have content that specific.
I couldn't do it to my neighborhood.
You could if people are geolocated that well.
Okay.
But you can zoom in as far as – because it uses the Google Maps API.
Again, this sounds like something that if you're away from home for a while would be a good way to just kind of keep in touch with what's happening.
Mm-hmm. It's a great way to see kind of local events as they're happening.
Birdseye, free?
Birdseye is free.
All right.
Everything – pretty much everything I mentioned, if not everything I mentioned, will be free. Probably my favorite music app right now is Songza. So everyone loves Pandora, and rightfully so. Pandora was a groundbreaking thing. But Songza then came along and, in my opinion, changed the game a little. I still love Pandora, but Songza is my go-to music curation / recommendation app, because what Songza does that Pandora doesn't is I would say nuance, but the best way to kind of describe it would just be to tell you what I get when I pull up Songza right now.
So, and Songza is spelled?
S-O-N-G-Z-A, and it's available cross-platform everywhere you want to go. Okay, so I pull up Songza, and it tells me it is Wednesday. Oh, no, excuse me, if I knew the day right. It's Thursday morning, play music for, and then I have the following options. Waking up, singing in the shower, working out, feeling confident, popular genres, or morning commute.
Okay.
And so I pick, we'll say, waking up. And you can have the choices of bright and happy pop, and indie rock, indie folk rock, electronic dance, country, or timeless pick-me-ups.
Okay.
So we'll take timeless pick-me-ups. I get it narrowed down further. AM to AM, 70s pop wake-up, a Michael Jackson dance party, or walking on sunshine.
The Katrina and the waves hit, I assume, would
absolutely
be the,
that's
the theme of that.
The theme of that one. And then you can look and read a little further about each of those stations. And so Songza takes curated stations and gives them to you in a way that fits day part and perhaps mood and activity.
Now, one thing Pandora lets you do is give a thumbs up or thumbs down. Say if you're on the Count Basie channel on Pandora, and it brings up something you don't like, you hit thumbs down, and the algorithm says, okay, they don't like that, person doesn't like that, we'll eliminate that. Because Songza would give you any kind of opportunity like that.
It does. It doesn't give you customized stations, but it uses the info you use to curate those stations. Because it assumes, rather than just saying you're a fan of a music, it assumes that everyone that is on their work, up in the morning, on their way to work, looking for this genre and this style, is kind of looking for the same thing. So it takes your feedback and everyone else's feedback and uses it for the common good and curates the station as a whole so that everyone gets the same experience. Because you've already told it so specifically what you're looking for, it assumes that everyone looking for something that specific is looking for the same thing.
Will it go deep? If I say I'm looking for mellow just before bed, will it go to a deep Neil Young album cut or a Paul Desmond jazz cut, or does it stay primarily with more popular?
No, it'll go very deep. Okay. There's actually one of the ones I have is just called Deep Cuts, and it's a classic rock Deep Cuts record.
Do you have any tips for – because often, especially if I'm on a long car trip and Laura is driving and I'm sitting there, I might go to the app store because I have an iPhone and an iPad. And I want to search for some apps because I think there are hundreds developed every week that I don't know about. Mm-hmm. Many of them I'm not interested in. Do you have any search tips for, because I'll just put in something like sports and 900,000 come up and I can't tell if it's what I want or what I don't want. If I put up music or something like that, it's so broad.
Yeah, it's pretty broad and can be overwhelming to say the least. One of the things that I'll always do if I'm in an app store looking is I always check featured. Anything that's up and coming is going to be featured. Well, not anything that's up and coming, but most of the time they're really good at catching stuff and featuring it. It also means that app has gotten kind of the seal of approval from whatever platform you're using.
And crowdsourcing.
They've obviously vetted it a little to know, hey, this works like we want it to. So featured is good, and you can go into genres from there and look at things. Top charts is another great way to do it. That tells you what's really popular and what's best-selling or this and that, and you can narrow it down into different categories from there as well.
Ty, thank you very much.
You bet.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Wayne Bell. And Wayne, this is the time of year when magazines, newspapers, websites begin to list their best of the previous 11-plus months. We're no different. We're going to take a look through the rest of December at, I guess, what we consider the best, our favorites, starting with television this time.
Well, I thought we better start with television and save movies till the end because we won't get them until
right
into January. So if you're in Arkansas, your best of list is going to – you can't do your movie one until about February.
Well, and not just Arkansas. Almost any place that's not one of the bigger markets.
Right. You'd have to go to like Dallas or something
right
to get them. But yeah, I thought why not start with TV because we have a pretty good idea now how the year will shape out. And this is I think it's been happening for a while, but this is the year that really made the statement that TV is where it's at now.
You mean the fact that traditionally for decades, the television season has been seen as a September to May sort of thing, but so many cable channels now don't care as much about sweeps month, so television, there's new television throughout the year, new good television.
Yeah, and you know, from a historical perspective, TV was always seen as kind of under film. You know, it was always, well, what does an aging film star do? They go on TV, or what does you know, at the Golden Globes, they separate TV actors and put them up in the far back of the room. And next year, you know, the Golden Globes are being hosted by Amy Poehler and the Oscars are being hosted by Seth MacFarlane. So it's proving that maybe film is becoming a little bit less relevant and TV is attracting the great actors, writers, and directors now because of cable and pay cable primarily.
The most watched shows on television are still unscripted. Sunday Night Football on NBC, talent shows like The Voice or American Idol.
Right.
But the most watched scripted show now in the target demographic, that coveted 18 to 49.
I know what you're going to say, and I can't.
It's The Walking Dead.
It's The Walking Dead, yeah.
It's shifted,
I don't get that.
But it's shifted off network. I mean, this is also the year where we have seen, especially for dramas,
yeah, I
people
mean, this
are going
is
to
so,
cable.
With the exception of The Good Wife and on CBS, it's really, and maybe some people like Scandal on ABC, but the majority of good network drama has been found outside of that. PBS, which got a gift from God that they could have never anticipated, to help their relevancy and their ratings, and that's Downton Abbey, I mean, which was an import. And then you go to HBO, which has been, you know, having Game of Thrones and Boardwalk Empire, Girls and Veep, and you go to Showtime with Homeland and
Dexter,
you know,
that's
the
Jackie.
Show. Yeah, Homeland's the show that, you know, just swept through the Emmys this year. And then AMC's got their run of Breaking Bad, and Mad Men finally came back this year after 18 months of being gone. And, you know, all of this was just such good quality television that it kind of, I think, in a way, has caused people to maybe not go to the movies as much because there's so much good quality television. That doesn't mean that they're not going to watch The Kardashians or they're not going to watch a
Real Housewives of someplace,
Honey Boo Boo. But, you know, there's such variety, and it really is a standard that is it's impeccable right now.
So your favorites of 2012?
Well, we have to say first a goodbye to some things that left us this year. You know, Desperate Housewives was a big show for a while on ABC, and that ended. And you know, we started to see the whittling down of The Office, and it's ending. 30 Rock,
right,
is ending. But if I was to say, you know, best of this year from a comedy side, Modern Family, I thought their third season, although it did very well at the Emmys, was uneven, but the fourth season's been hitting it out of the park this year. And then new shows like Girls on HBO, it was brilliant, and Veep, and, you know, there's so much good comedy that's found. Louis C.K. has his show, which is now going to go on hiatus, but it's worth discovering if you haven't seen it.
Right.
And then if you go into drama, I mean, you can take your pick. I really do feel like the one that rose above this year and everybody was talking about, of course, was Homeland.
And was that first season on this calendar year?
Because no, it was on last year. So the second year was on this year, but I think more people discovered it this year on demand and on DVD because of their sweep of the Emmys. But you had Mad Men, which was excellent. You had Downton Abbey, which was excellent, about to start its third season. Breaking Bad had its part of its final season was great. And then, like you mentioned, you know, the fanboys have their Walking Dead or Game of Thrones, right, or there's so much good television out there.
Well, I think my favorites were, you mentioned them, they were on back-to-back for a few Sundays this summer, Girls and Veep, both first-season comedies, incredibly different, but they were on back-to-back.
Those Girls starts again in a few weeks.
Right.
And I saw their trailer the other day, and it looks amazing.
Those would be my two, I think, favorite shows. And then I'd have to say one of my favorite television moments of 2012 was when Louis C.K. hosted Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. And his monologue, which was basically a routine, a stand-up routine, was one of the best that the show has had in years.
Well, and if you want to talk about that, you know, some of the reality and scripted reality or improv type shows, Daily Show, Saturday Night Live, of course, they had the election, so it was the field day for them. So we can only look forward and think 2013 is going to be good as well.
I think so, even if The Office and 30 Rock are gone.
That's okay.
Yes, it is now. Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 11th of December, 2012. It's the birthday of Grace Paley, born New York City, 1922, grew up in the Bronx, surrounded by all sorts of immigrants. Her own parents spoke Yiddish and Russian at home, English only in public. She loved to hear all these different tongues. But when she started writing poetry, she wrote in a formal, stilted British style. She thought that's what poems were supposed to sound like. And then she met W.H. Auden, and he read her work. And Grace Paley recalled, "We went through a few poems, and he kept asking me, 'Do you really talk like that?' And I kept saying, 'Oh, well, sometimes.' That was the great thing I learned from Auden, that you'd better talk your own language." It's the birthday of the novelist Jim Harrison, born Grayling, Michigan, 1937. Big reader as a kid, but very religious. And then he said, up to 16, I wanted to be a preacher. And then one day I did a whirlwind. I jumped from Jesus to John Keats in 3 days. Started out as a poet. And then in 1970, he was hunting. He hurt his back had to stay in bed for months, and his friend Thomas McGuane told him he should try writing a novel. So he did. It was entitled Wolf, A False Memoir, and a few years later, Legends of the Fall, his first big success. Published two books last year, The Great Leader, a novel, and a book of poems, Songs of Unreason. And it's also the birthday of the man who prompted Harrison to write that novel, Thomas McGuane, born in Wyandotte, Michigan, 1939. His first novel, The Sporting Club, 1969. His 10th novel came out last year, Driving on the Rim. Thomas McGuane, the only member of the American Academy of Arts and Letters, who is also in the National Cutting Horse Association's Hall of Fame. But he says he doesn't consider himself a real rancher. All the ranchers I know have had back surgery, operations on their rotator cuffs. They all have new knees. I'd like to think I belong to that breed, but I don't. And it's the anniversary of UNICEF, the United Nations International Children's Emergency Fund, founded on this date in 1946, to provide food, clothing, and medical aid for children in countries devastated by World War II. Here's a poem for today by Stuart Kestenbaum, In Praise of Hands. It's not just the people who live in the city who've lost the thread that ties them to the woven world of stones and earth, fields alive with pollen and wings. Who among us understands how oceans rise and fall, currents swirling around the planet with messages in bottles floating on the water? When the tide is out, we can go to the shore, dig clay with our bare hands, and make something beautiful from it, a vessel with thin walls that holds a canyon. In both hands, like an offering, we can hold the memory of eroded stones and earth, eons contained in this empty bowl. We can fill it with water that reflects the sky, that has witnessed everything since time began. We can drink and be blessed, clouds gathering over us. In Praise of Hands by Stuart Kestenbaum, from Prayers and Run-On Sentences, published by Deerbrook Editions and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Reputation.com, a service for managing businesses' online image by working to improve how they look in search engines and review sites, Reputation.com. And by Allianz. Allianz has been providing investment, insurance, and retirement solutions through its affiliated companies in the United States since 1896. Written by Holly Vanderhaar, produced by Nick Vedder. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Cecil.
Cecil, Arkansas is...
north of Peter Pender.
And Peter Pender was something that Christina Thomas picked.
It
just
was.
Like, yes.
Uh-huh. It's in Franklin County.
Okay. And we don't know why it's called Cecil. And we still don't know why Peter Pender is called Peter Pender.
No, I do not know.
Okay.
I suppose they're named for somebody.
New Year's resolutions.
Okay.
That's what we have to
find out.
Oh,
Lord.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
You and I back together tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be with Christina on Thursday.
You will.
Us back on Friday.
Yep.
And on tomorrow's show, or Thursday's show, one of those two shows, Jim Brickman, who is going to be at Walton Arts Center Monday night. Brief conversation. Going to record it this afternoon.
Oh, very cool.
And then it'll be on either Wednesday or Thursday.
Oh, look forward to hearing that.
All sorts of Christmas stuff going on all over the place. That's why we have Becca Martin Brown on the show, right?
That is. Yeah, I stayed in last night, so that's good. Preparing for all of the Christmas things that'll be happening, holiday things happening.
Cold last night.
Oh, it was also very cold.
15 degrees when I got
ugh, I don't do cold. I just
But wait, in this very space, not even a week ago, you said you were ready for it to get colder for Christmas.
For Christmas. Is it Christmas, Kyle? It's
okay,
not Christmas.
Okay, I got you. Thanks, Antoinette.
Thank you, Kyle.